Good morning. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And Real Life is the radio show that's dedicated to women who are ready to love life and make joy a part of the daily dialogue. I don't know about you, but I have had another really, really busy week and just doing all kinds of juggling acts with work and the radio show. And I actually started drum lessons this week, so I'm very excited about that, frame drum lessons. And so now we have pause to share these next 60 minutes together. I invite you to join me in your favorite beverage this morning. I am having a cup of chai, which is inspired by the recent cold snap. And find a quiet place for yourself. Even if you have to lock yourself in the closet to get away from the kids, and let the next 60 minutes be a way that you can show yourself some loving kindness this morning. How can we break down our belief that violence is an inevitable part of the human condition and that peace is not possible? My guest this morning, Rachel Mann, who is the owner and founder of Meta Knowledge for Peace, spends her time exploring how wisdom from indigenous traditions have adapted into Western settings, and she articulates how these practices can change our consciousness in language that resonates to non-natives. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
I see you nodding your head.
Yeah.
You agree with all of that?
Yeah, I think so.
So let's start with meta-knowledge. What does that mean?
Well, meta-knowledge was a name that I came up with in a wordplay with a colleague who knows my work very well. And metta is means loving kindness.
Metta, which I'm familiar with from the Buddhist tradition.
Which is from the Buddhist tradition. It's from the Pali language. And I put metta together, metta because of my interest in bringing the practices of wisdom building and compassion from Buddhism and shamanism, or the new native spirituality in the West, and merging it with knowledge that we have in Western disciplines such as the humanities and sciences and social sciences about violence and peace.
So you've had quite a journey to get you to Meta Knowledge, which is your own business now, right? And what is it that you offer through Meta Knowledge?
Well, I actually I do a lot of different things. I left my tenured position at the University of Virginia. I was a full-time administrator and faculty member.
What were you teaching there?
I actually taught three courses. I actually taught a course called Story and Healing with a wonderful colleague named John Alexander. And we developed the course around exploring topics about racism and interracial conflict in the U.S. and looked at it through the lens of story and healing. I also taught a course on gender violence. And basically what I brought to the table in these courses was contemplative practices, meaning meditation and other ways of looking at your inner world with an exploration of violence and the connection between violence and racism and the history of slavery in our country and how that still impacts us in terms of our attitudes and beliefs about race and about, you know, people of different races, and bringing people together to try to create a healing conversation around those topics. And we taught the course together for 9 years at UVA, and it was an amazing experience. I developed a lot of new methods that I adapted out of Buddhism and Native American spirituality to help with the exploration. And students were on waiting lists for our course and would tell us at the end of our course that they had, it was the most useful course, the most wonderful course they'd ever taken in their, you know, their university career, and that it changed their lives. And so we were on to something.
So you left your tenured position there.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, how hard was it for you to leave your tenured position getting that kind of feedback from students?
Well, you have to understand, when I say tenured, and that's actually a word, I had presumption of continued employment as an administrator. I actually oversaw a teaching and technology center.
Oh.
In the College of Arts and Sciences. I had made my academic career in administration. So half of my time was that, or more, a little more than half, and half was teaching and research. So it was hard because it was salaried, a nice salary, benefits and everything like that. And it was a leap into the unknown.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to take what I had learned through my research and my teaching out into the wider world. But, you know, I didn't know what that was about. I also had known for many years that I needed to be doing healing work. In my classroom teaching, I was doing essentially what I felt was healing of the group, you know, because we would work together to heal these wounds that we all carry about violence and racism, I think, in our nation. But I also had been called due to, in a sense, you might say, I felt called to also doing one-on-one healing work in indigenous healing traditions. So I eventually made the decision to leave to get formal training as a shamanic healer, under a teacher named Alberto Viodo, who had studied for 25 years in the Amazon and Andes of Peru and other places in South America, and then had distilled the healing practices from his teachers into a Western training format. So I attended his school and so Meta Knowledge for Peace, basically, this is the background of Meta Knowledge for Peace.
Yeah.
I have a private client shamanic healing practice in Charlottesville and Virginia, both up in Northern Virginia as well as in the Tidewater area. I do consulting with organizations that work with problems of violence and are attempting to foster peace. I do program development. I also do training. I develop training programs for professionals working, as I say, on the front lines, taking the methods that I developed in my undergraduate teaching to help professionals explore the spiritual dimensions that get opened up by dealing with problems of violence and suffering and trauma. And I also do research and writing, and I'm currently working on a book on two books, really, one on the teachings of peace of Native American peacekeepers, and also another book on how to bring contemplative practices from Native American spirituality into mainstream settings to help us address problems of violence.
Wow. I mean, just wow. So I want to dive into a lot of that, but I want to start with the leap of faith. You know, I think there's so many of us who are hungry to follow our heart's calling. And we've been entrained that, well, the right thing to do, the safe thing to do, the societal mores dictate that we stay in the job that has the retirement plan and the medical benefits and vacation time. And so can you take us back to the leap?
The leap.
The leap.
Well, the leap, it happened, I think, gradually over time, but then there was a moment when it became clear.
Yeah, yeah, I'm interested
in
the moment.
You want to know the moment.
I want to hear about the moment.
Okay. Well, the moment was that I had gotten a divorce a couple of years, not long before, and, you know, so I changed that aspect of my life. And I had suffered from chronic pain of fibromyalgia for years and insomnia, and I was getting healthier emotionally, you know, as I worked on my own healing, but the insomnia got worse. And then I had kind of a big crisis. I had been taking clonazepam for sleeping at night, and I was in a very stressful time. I had a very stressful semester at my job. We'd lost an employee, and I was working extra hours. And I ran out of my prescription, and I didn't go for 3 days to refill it.
And this is to help you sleep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one night, there were a few things that happened, sort of events that happened related to my job, a situation that had been very stressful that I thought was over. I was informed by my boss that it was going to be ongoing, and that night, I wasn't, and then my cat died, actually, all of a sudden in the morning. I took her into the vet, and she was sick in the morning. I took her to the vet. In the afternoon, I got a call that she was dying. I needed to come, and I went, and we helped her cross over with euthanasia. And that night, I fell asleep, unusually, immediately at 10, quite exhausted, and then I woke up in the middle of the night, and how do I say this? Let's see. I sort of felt the presence of my cat.
Okay.
And she said, it's time for you to accept the fact that you need to get out and do the work you're meant to do. You need to step up and do this. And it was like one of those, whether you believe it was my cat speaking to me or a projection of my own mind, it was one of those moments of just clarity. You know, she said, you're going to get sicker. You're not getting well, and you need to just do what you know you're meant to do. So then I didn't get much back to sleep. The next morning, I got up out of bed. I was 100% clear that I needed to probably leave my job. I went to my doctor, and apparently because of going off this prescription, cold turkey, which you're not supposed to do, it was like my nervous system sort of went haywire, and I ended up being quite sick.
Oh.
And so I ended up taking 4 months of medical leave on the advice of friends, like wait and see, make sure it isn't because, you know, you're kind of in a stressed out. And after 4 months, I gave notice and said, you know, I'm definitely going to leave. Mm-hmm. So that was the crisis.
Okay.
And, you know, making a big change like that, it's scary, right? You know, I mean, it's not something that one necessarily wants to do. And I had resisted. I'm a very stubborn person. You know, I wait until the very last moment to
okay.
do something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very, very disciplined and loyal. And that's what it took to
yeah.
push me out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got pushed out, and I finally started to do the work that I knew that I know I'm meant to do, you know.
Well, congratulations. You mm-hmm. know, I am such a big supporter in following that, the way I might say it is that tiny, quiet voice. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it showed up in the way of your dead cat.
It was like a screaming voice. Yeah, my dead cat.
It wasn't the quiet.
I know. Well, and the other piece of it is that I'd been praying and meditating in a native way for over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm an academic and I'm an academically trained
yeah.
anthropologist and Soviet studies scholar, it's not exactly something you want to admit to people
right.
that you are in this alternative, what is an alternative non-mainstream healing modality and a new religious movement, because people tend to associate like that you're a little kooky. And I was worried about professional opprobrium. Yes.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till. I'm Jennifer, and this morning Rachel Mann is joining me, and Rachel is the owner and founder of Meta Knowledge for Peace, and we're about to dive into, I think, this area of that I actually at first resisted when you and I first talked, but this idea of native wisdom. And since you and I talked however long ago it was, 6 weeks ago, I took a trip to Mexico
mm-hmm.
and had great conversations with native people down there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there was a man who offered to take me to see a shaman.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for a variety of reasons, decided not to do that. But I think it's the first time I actually felt open to the possibility of exploring that. And it felt like being in the native culture, having a native person presented to me in a way that could maybe help facilitate some healing for me, felt a lot more reasonable than being in the United States in our culture, where there aren't, at least I don't see many actual indigenous people. Personally, I don't run across many. And so there feels like there's this wide gap between the culture we live in and this native wisdom that's available to us. But like if I saw a white woman who said, oh, yeah, I could help you with that, there, I have this moment of, I don't know about that. And I'm sure I'm not the first person you've encountered. Will you speak to that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I actually was introduced to Native American spirituality in first through books, but then I eventually started teaching with a woman named Dahani Oahu, who is Cherokee, lives up in Vermont. She's a chief of the Green Mountain Band of the Aniumwiwa. I got hooked up through a woman to whom I was going for a kind of energy healing body work because of the chronic pain I developed in the early 90s. She's also a recognized teacher in two of the Tibetan Buddhist lineages, the Drinkan Kagyu and Nyingmapa Buddhist lineages. So she's a very interesting woman. And I went to study Buddhism with her only to find that it was the native practices that really resonated strongly with my heart. And I went in that direction. But like you, I was surprised because my background is white Western European ancestry. I have an ancestor who came to Jamestown here in Virginia back in, probably when it was like the early 1600s. And I struggled with ethical questions about it because I'd been doing teaching and research on violence and on racism in our society. There's a lot of controversy, actually, among Native Americans about the Native Americans who choose to teach non-natives. And then, of course, there is what, as you pointed out, that sort of kind of judgment that sometimes comes when you meet somebody who looks white and so on, who says that they're a follower of any kind of Native spirituality.
It just, for me, it just feels like it doesn't relate to my life.
Right.
As I live it within this culture.
Right. So. But the beauty of what Dahani Wahu teaches is that she's really essentially, just like many of the Asian teachers who came to the West to teach Buddhism, what she's essentially done, as they did, is translate the teachings about how do we create inner peace, how do we work with conflict in ourselves and conflict in our world, in our relationships. And here are meditation practices and other kinds of practices that will help us build and forge that kind of inner peace and greater self-awareness. So she's really a very brilliant teacher in that way. And in some respects, it has a very native flavor to it because you pray to the six directions, north, south, east, and west, earth, and sky. There's a fire ceremony as part of the practice and so on. So I basically hid my spiritual leanings except to a few close friends over a period of a decade. I didn't study with Dahani for more than 3 years. I eventually left the community for personal reasons. And I was in a journey of my own, in a sense trying to make peace with what my heart was called to. And to figure out how to go forward with it in my life. So as far as that thing about you, your experience of being resistant to it, of course, people are resistant. I actually still teach part-time for UVA. I teach two courses, one on the new shamanism in the West.
It's called
Shamanism in the West, and on Gandhi and the Native American Peacekeepers.
Wow.
And one of the things that I'm doing in this class is I'm bringing awareness about what the new shamanism is. And about what has happened in the contact between Europeans and Native peoples on this continent. And what has emerged, particularly in the late 20th century, is this interest on the part of many non-Natives in Native spirituality, which actually historically goes back to the time Europeans first came. I mean, we live here in Charlottesville, Lewis and Clark befriended many Natives along the way as they went towards the West Coast. And there's been a lot of cross-cultural fertilization between them. But what remains in our bias about Native spiritualities and cultures, and I'm putting it in plural because there are many different tribal cultures, many different languages, hundreds of different languages, and so on, is the old racism, that racist imperative that Europeans brought with them across the ocean, the manifest destiny that they were destined to take over the American continent, and over four centuries killed probably up to 90 million people, Native peoples, through war, other forms of violence, disease, and starvation. So Westerners still have this idea that their cultural system, their healing modalities, their medicine and so on is superior to those of Native peoples. So what I tell my students is that when they feel judgment towards somebody like me, or alternatively towards a Native person who's a practitioner of the healing practices and rituals from their own cultures, it's still basically an ongoing form of racism. And so a lot of my work is really breaking down that old perception, which is invisible to most of us, because like you said, in many parts of the country, of the United States specifically, we don't necessarily come into contact with a lot of Native American people. Although it is also deceptive, because in many Native many people with Native ancestry, because they've there's been intermarriage with whites, look white and have white skin, can cross the color line. And also, you know about the history of eugenics in the state of Virginia, that a man named Walter Plecker actually set out to wipe out Native American identity in Virginia. It became illegal to claim Indian identity in Virginia. So there are actually many, many people in Virginia who's not going back just one or two or three generations, had Native grandparents and great-grandparents, but they were forced to either claim white or black identity. So there's sort of this double bind. So because I feel an ethical, because there is controversy about whites taking on non-Native spirituality among some Native peoples, I feel that I have an ethical responsibility to helping break down the invisible sort of ignorance just the invisible racism that all of us have about Native Americans, and also the ignorance about their cultures and religions, as well as the history of what happened to them. And then we're not talking about distant history. We're talking about ongoing, but also, women, Indian women were being sterilized in this state, I believe, as late as the 1980s, the 1970s for certain. So I do that work, and then in the process of doing that work...
You know what, Rachel, we need to take a break, a short break. So when we come back, I'd love to hear... No, you're doing great. I'd love to hear about what happens in the process of that work. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And if you're just joining us this morning, my guest is Rachel Mann, and Rachel is the owner and founder of Meta Knowledge for Peace. Rachel, recently I was just introduced to the work of Martin Prechtel. And in fact, when I was down in Mexico, some of my friends were reading his books. Is it The Secrets of the Talking Jaguar and some of the others? So I just want to say my friends are raving over that book. So I would encourage anybody listening, I'm imagining that gives some kind of snapshot of what you're talking about with Native wisdom.
Yeah, I actually brought Martine to Charlottesville.
Oh, Martine. Oh, you did?
In 2004.
Can you bring him back? I didn't know about him then. And the other person that I've really been just captured by is Don Miguel Ruiz, who has written The Four Agreements. Mm-hmm. And The Four Agreements, let's see if I can remember them, are be impeccable with your word, so you don't talk against anybody else or yourself, and make sure that you do what you say you're going to do and speak with integrity. Always do your best, which is on a continuum, so always being, continually checking in to see where you are with that. Make no assumptions, which we are constantly doing as human beings based on our past experiences, and take nothing personally. And I've adopted these in my life. We've adopted it in my family, and I take it into organizations. So it's really fun to, and his story is that he had been a practicing physician and kind of in the mainstream culture. And my understanding is that he had some kind of near-death experience. And when he came back from that experience, realized that he needed to go back to the native wisdom of his tradition, which is the Toltec tradition. And now that's the place he's practicing from. So so that's been my limited exposure. And what I'm hoping is what you'll do now is take us through maybe a short practice that might be related to some of the work you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a meditation practice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, one of the practice that's actually taught by my teacher, Alberto Viotto, whom I mentioned earlier, is based upon the archetypes or the powers that the Caro people and other people down there who are descendants of the ancient Inca, in a sense, turn to for strength, inspiration, and support. And they are the serpent or the snake, which represents the physical realm, the concrete, the material, the jaguar, which is the mental and emotional dimension of our lives. It's also the shadow and the unconscious, the hummingbird, which represents the mythic or the big dimension, the archetypal dimension of our lives, or you might think of it as the hero's journey that we're on in our life, and condor eagle, which is the dimension of spirit and pure raw energy, our connection to creator, God or Wankantanka or the divine, whatever you want to call it. So this meditation, actually, we do based upon what some people are familiar with is the seven chakras in the energy body.
And I just want to say many of mm-hmm. our listeners won't be familiar with that, too.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. So some listeners may be aware, others might not, that there are many traditions in Asia as well as native traditions that recognize that we are surrounded by something called an aura, that we have our physical body, but we have an energy body that is in the shape of, in a sense, an egg. Think of it as an egg that goes out arm's length all around you and then goes about a foot beneath the feet and a foot above the head. And in that energy body, we have seven energy centers, one at the base of the spine, one just below the belly button, one at the solar plexus or right there where the stomach is, and the heart at the throat, and at the third eye, which is a point just above and between the eyebrows and on the crown of the head. So these chakras are actually common in Hindu traditions and so on, and yogic traditions, but also to the Caro people in Peru. So we work with these energy centers because they are essentially sort of the generators, the energy generators, as well as the, what would you call it, the ventilating systems of the luminous body. They bring in energy, universal energy, and they send out energy, both so-called negative energy as well as positive energy. So we, our luminous bodies, our auras can get filled up with heavy energies. And I think we're all familiar with the experience of feeling sort of leaden.
Sure.
We're depressed or we're tired or we're stressed out.
I think I had that one day last week.
Yeah. And we just feel like our physical body may feel heavy, but there's just a sense. It may not even be a physical sense. It may just feel like a sense of heaviness or doom or something. And in these traditions, they recognize that energy exists and that energy and emotions are very interconnected. So if we build up a lot of heavy energy from being very fearful or anxious all the time, which kind of builds up as a crystallized energy in the luminous body, we will actually feel very heavy. So this practice is basically connecting with these archetypal energies of the serpent, the jaguar, the hummingbird, and the condor eagle at the lower four energy centers. So the root, the first one at the base of the spine, below the belly button, the stomach, solar plexus, and the heart. And then there are three characters at the throat, the third eye, and the crown. Huascar, who's the guardian of the underworld. And right there, he's guarding the gates to what's essentially our unconscious. He's like our ego. The third eye is Quetzalcoatl, who is a great Peruvian general. And he's called the daykeeper. He keeps track of our day-to-day lives and keeping our calendar and marshaling all the resources of this world to help us carry out what we want to achieve in this world. And that the crown of the head, right at the top of the head, is Pachacuti Inca, who's the gatekeeper to, you might call, the upper world or the heavenly realm. So I'll just lead us in a short meditation where we greet these energies at the different energy centers.
Great.
Is that okay?
Let's try it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll invite you and our listeners to take a deep breath in through the nose and release that breath out through the mouth. And just come into using the breath, doing that circle breath in through the nose, out through breath, out through the mouth two times. And just doing that to bring your awareness into the physical body, into the present moment. And now visualize, imagine there's a cord of light coming up from the center of the earth, and it's coming up through water and stone and earth and the roots of the trees, and it's coming out of the earth and coming up through the floor of the room that you're in, and it's rising up through the base of the spine. And it's rising up, dancing along the spine, parallel to the spine, and rising up and up and up, and it's actually going out through the top of the head, up into the heavens above. And imagine that you've got a cord of golden light coming down from the heavens above, from the sun and the moon and the stars, the galaxies, and it's coming down through the top of the head, the crown of the head, and meeting that light. And the two lights are dancing together along the spine, as the energy from the top of the head goes down along the spine, down, 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 and exits out through the base of the spine, going into the earth. And now bring your awareness down to that first energy center right at the base of the spine, the first energy center. And there visualize this beautiful glossy serpent. The serpent in many traditions is a symbol of our connection to the earth, our primal connection to the earth. Our bodies come from the earth, and our bodies return to the earth. The earth feeds us, nurtures us, takes care of us. And so the serpent represents that part of us. And just see if you can see what that serpent, what that snake is doing. Is it sleeping? Is it in the fight-flight mode, coiled up and ready to strike? Is it shedding its skin? Say hello to your serpent and feed it with your awareness. And now imagine that light again coming up from the base of the spine up to the second energy center just below the belly button. And there visualize a jaguar, this beautiful cat who is top of the food chain in the jungle. The cat that climbs in trees, that walks on the earth, and that swims in the waters. The jaguar is one who can walk in the darkness and still see. So this is our energy center. She carries the energy of being able to track and follow with great awareness our emotions and the movements of the mind. Noticing what she's doing, breathing her into that second energy center. And be grateful to her for the help that she gives us. And now bring your attention up to the solar plexus, the place where your stomach is, right there between the, just below and in between where the rib cage comes down. And there visualize this beautiful hummingbird, iridescent greens, blues, oranges, reds, pinks, hovering there in your solar plexus. Greeting this beautiful hummingbird, this hummingbird that travels thousands upon thousands of miles, this tiny bird from South America to North America, breathing her into the third energy center. And thanking her for the way that she teaches us to be heroes in our lives and to be able to see our lives from the big view, the big mind, not the small mind, from the place of our souls. And now bring your attention to the place of the heart. And there visualize a beautiful eagle. What is the eagle doing? Here is the place of love's wisdom, of compassion. This is the place of pure spirit and energy. The heart is the place where we see the world through the eyes of spirit, the eyes of Creator. Compassionate, loving, and seeing the big within the small, and the small within the large. Seeing the big picture. And noticing what your eagle is doing, sitting on a branch, in a nest, Is it young or old? Hunting, flying high, high, high with the clouds. And now bring your attention to the throat, where is Waskar, the guardian, to the gates of the underworld. The gates of your underworld. The underworld is not a place to fear. This is the place of your dreams. It's the place of parts of yourself that you meet in dreams and in daydreams. And notice what your Waskar looks like. Is she tall, short? How is she dressed? She has a sense of humor. She very serious. Breathing her in. Is she saying that there are things from the unconscious that are ready to become, to come into awareness? Or are the doors closed for now? Are things quiet? And now bring your awareness up to the third eye, the place between the eyebrows and just above the eyebrows in the center of the forehead. There visualize this beautiful winged serpent, a dragon actually, with a feathered head and a scaled tail. This powerful being. Quetzalcoatl, the day keeper. This is the general of your life. He manages the day-to-day affairs of your life, marshals all the resources you need to set up your calendar, to set up your day, to bring into manifestation in the world through your vision those things that you wish to achieve. What is Quetzalcoatl doing? At rest? Or is there a big project ahead in your life? Sending gratitude to Quetzalcoatl, bring your awareness up to the crown, to the top of the head, where sits this beautiful king, this noble king named Pachacuti Inca. Pachacuti Inca, who guards the gates to the upper world, to the place of dreams and visions, to the place of our destiny, our true calling, to the place of our ancestors, and the kingdom of the dolphins and the whales. Connecting us to the stars above, the heavenly realms, other planets, other galaxies, to the sun and the moon. What is Pachacuti Inca wearing? How is he dressed? Does he say, are the doors open that you may harness your destiny? Or are they closed? Are they ready to be open to a new destiny? And saying thank you to all of these energies that reside in these places in your body. Take a deep breath in through the nose and breathe out through the mouth, releasing anything that has been loosened up in the meditation. And bring your awareness back to the room.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till. Brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And if you're just joining us, Rachel Mann just took us through this delightful meditative practice. Thank you. When you were talking about the golden light coming up from the earth and down from the sky, I was feeling chills running up and down my spine. So that was fun.
Yeah.
So what, Rachel, what's been the most powerful shamanic healing you've experienced?
Oh. You ask dangerous questions. Oh. Well, in my search for healing from chronic pain, fibromyalgia, which is a diffuse pain in the soft tissue of the body, and Western medicine didn't really, especially back 20 years ago, provide anything other than anti-inflammatories or narcotic pain medications. I've had many amazing experience under the hands of lots of non-traditional healers. But I would say that largely the experiences, what happened was in the first time I went to a healer, she put me on her table. And when I tell people this story, I can sometimes see their eyes getting glazed over and they think, oh, this is really strange. And But it is really true, and I always tell it on the first day of my class in my undergraduate course, Shamanism in a New Age, because as I say to my students later, I want to get them as far out in their reactiveness and judgment as I can in order to begin to reel them back. Because the mind, the human mind, I think has so much more creativity and capacity than we really give it in the West. We give it in the West. We are connected to so many more dimensions of experience and visions and insights than we're really trained to access. So when I got on this woman's table, kind of not knowing what to expect because I had never done anything like this before, she put her hands lightly on my body, and within about 5 minutes, I was in a deep trance. And all of a sudden, I was experiencing the death of a man on a field of battle. And I experienced his breathing. I experienced the mud under his body. I experienced his horse dying next to him. And I also was given, in a sense, sort of a visions of his life and who he was. And then in the process, as I experienced him dying, the healer I was working with encouraged me to communicate with him. And he was dying in despair because he'd been a holy warrior. He'd killed many people for Christ. And he'd believed that as a holy warrior, he would end up sitting at the feet of Christ when he died, sort of as his reward. And because of his horse dying next to him, whom he'd said told he would always protect, he was in horror because he realized that he was unforgivable, that he murdered all these people. And I forgave him, and he was released. And when I got up from the table, I was pain-free.
Wow.
And I was pain-free for several weeks. And I knew I'd experienced something very powerful. And that really catalyzed my journey into shamanism, and it catalyzed my journey into exploring deeper dimensions about how violence impacts us individually as well as groups, as a collective. Because,
you know, Rachel, we have just a few minutes and there's so much more to talk about. So I'd like to invite you back to the show
at some point
because I still have all these questions I'd like to explore with you. But what I'd like to maybe end with here is, how can we get in touch with you to maybe bring some of your work into our organizations, and what's the best way to reach you? And
well, of course, I'm always interested in having new clients in my private client healing practice here in Charlottesville, as well as in Alexandria, Virginia, and Virginia Beach. I can be reached at my phone number, 434-227-0538, or by email at Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, at metaknowledge, M-E-T-T-A, and the word knowledge.com.
And you'll have a website coming up soon.
Yeah, my website is going to be up soon. It's under reconstruction now.
Yeah. And that's always an awkward time.
I'm very interested. I do training with professionals in organizations on, I develop training programs helping professionals working with problems of violence and suffering explore the spiritual dimensions of what it means to do this kind of work. And I teach professionals how to talk about religion and spirituality in a respectful way. Needless to say, I don't always share some of the more out there stories in those settings that I do now, because I want to be respectful of the fact that people have very different experiences of religion and beliefs about prayer. And I also offer workshops in Charlottesville and Northern Virginia on Peruvian shamanism. And I'm going to be offering one here in town called The Healthy Child, Raising the Healthy Child and World Peace with Martin Poole, who wants to start a nonviolent, national nonviolent parenting campaign.
Oh, that's beautiful. And that's in May.
That's in May at the Unitarian Universalist Church, Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church here in Charlottesville, Virginia.
So if anybody is interested, they can call your number and get more information. Mm-hmm. That's great. Rachel, thank you so much. This has just been fascinating. Like I said, I have so many more areas that I'd like to explore with you, but we'll have to do
thank
it another time.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I'm really so great to speak with you.
You're welcome.
You're a wonderful spirit.
Oh, thank
you. Thank
you. And thank you, my listener, for joining us this morning and letting this be another way to be kind to yourself. Remember to log on to jennifertill.com where you can listen to past episodes of the show. And we've got some really good ones lying, you know, just kind of collecting. And I go back and listen to them, and it's really fun. And I'd like to, on behalf of everybody here at Real Life, like to thank you for spending part of your weekend with us. And until next Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, remember to ask yourself, what's the kindest thing I can do for me right now? See you next week.